Gulliver's Travels, Part 4, Chapter 10. The author's economy and happy life among the Hohenems, his great improvement in virtue by conversing with them, their conversations, the author has notice given him by his master that he must depart from the country. He falls into a swoon for grief, but submits. He contrives and finishes the canoe by the help of a fellow servant, and puts to sea at a venture. I have settled my little economy to my own heart's content. My master had orders a room be made for me, after their manner about 6 yards from the house, the sides and floors of which I plastered with clay, and covered with rush mats of my own contriving. I had beaten hemp, which grows there wild, and made it a sort of tickling. This I filled with the feathers of several birds I had taken with springes made of Yahoo's hair, and were excellent food. I have worked the 2 chairs with my knife, the sorrel nag helping me in the grosser and more laborious part. When my clothes were worn to rags, I made myself others with the skins of rabbits, and a certain beautiful animal about the same size called Nohon, the skin of which is covered with a fine down. Of these I also made very tolerable stockings. I soled my shoes with wood I cut from a tree, and fitted to the upper leather, and when this was worn out, I supplied it with the skins of Yahoos, dried in the sun. I often got honey out of hollow trees, which I mingled with water or ate with my bread. No man could more verify the truth of these 2 maxims, that nature is very easily satisfied, and that necessity is the mother of invention. I enjoyed perfect health of body and tranquillity of mind. I did not feel the treachery or inconstancy of the friend, nor the injuries of a secret or open enemy. I had no occasion of bribing, flattering, or pimping to procure the favor of any great man or of his minion. I wanted no fence against fraud or oppression. Here was neither physician to destroy my body, nor lawyer to ruin my fortune, no informer to watch my words or actions, or forge accusations against me for hire. There were no gibers, censurers, backbiters, pickpockets, highwaymen, housebreakers, attorneys, bawds, buffoons, gamesters, politicians, wits, splintics, tedious talkers, controverters, ravagers, murderers, robbers, virtuosos, no leaders, no followers of party and faction, no encouragers to vice by seducement or examples, no dungeons, accents, gibbets, whipping posts or pillories, no cheating shopkeepers or mechanics, no pride, vanity or affectation, no fops, bullies, drunkards, strolling whores or poxes, no ranting, lewd, expensive wives, no stupid, proud pedants, no importunate, overbearing, quarrelsome, noisy, roaring, empty, conceited, swearing companions, no scoundrels raised from the dust upon the merit of their vices, or nobility thrown into it on account of their virtues, no lords, fiddlers, judges, or dancing masters. I had the favor of being admitted to several Hohenhenims who came to visit or dine with my master, where his honor graciously suffered me to wait in the room and listen to their discourse. Both he and his company would often descend to ask me questions and receive my answers. I had also sometimes the honor of attending my master in his visits to others. I never presumed to speak, except in answer to a question, and then I did it with inward regret, because it was such a loss of so much time for improving myself. But I was infinitely delighted with the station of a humble auditor in such conversations, where nothing passed but what was useful, expressed in the fewest and most significant words, where, as I have already said, the greatest decency was observed, without the least degree of ceremony, where no person spoke without being pleased himself and pleasing his companions, where there was no interruption, tediousness, heat, or difference of sentiments. They have a notion that when people are met together, a short silence does much improve the conversation. This I found to be true, for during these little intermissions of talks, new ideas would arise in their minds, which very much enliven the discourse. Their subjects are generally on friendship and benevolence, and order and an economy, sometimes upon the visible operations of nature or the ancient traditions, upon the bounds and limits of virtue, upon the unerring rules of reason, or upon some determinations to be taken at the next great assembly, and often upon the various excellences of poetry. I may add, without vanity, that my presence often gave them sufficient matter for discourse, because it afforded my master an occasion of letting his friends into the history of me and my country, upon which they were pleased to dissent, in a manner not very advantageous to humankind, and for that I reason I shall not repeat what they said, only I may be allowed to observe that his honor, to my great admiration, appeared to understand the nature of Yahoos much better than myself. He went through all our vices and follies, and discovered many which I had never mentioned to him, by only supposing what qualities a Yahoo of their country, with a small proportion of reason, might be capable of exerting, and concluded, with too much probability, how vile as well as miserable such a creature must be. I can freely confess that, with all the little knowledge I have of any value, was acquired by the lectures I received from my master, and from hearing the discourses of him and his friends, to which I should be prouder to listen than to dictate to the greatest and wisest assembly in Europe. I admired the strength, comeliness, and speed of the inhabitants, and such a constellation of virtues in such amiable persons produced in me the highest veneration. At first, indeed, I did not feel that natural awe which the Yahoos and all other animals bear towards them, but it grew upon me by degrees, much sooner than I imagined, and it was mingled with a respectful love and gratitude that they would condescend to distinguish me from the rest of my species. When I thought of my family, my friends, my countrymen, or the human race in general, I considered them as they really were, Yahoos in shape and disposition, perhaps a little more civilized and qualified with the gift of speech, but making no other use of reason than to improve and multiply those vices whereof their brethren in his country had only the share of which nature allowed them. When I happened to behold the reflection of my own form in a lake or fountain, I turned away my face in horror and detestation of myself, and could better endure the sight of a common Yahoo than of my own person. By conversing with the Hohenhenems, and looking upon them with delight, I have failed to imitate their gait and gesture, which is now grown into a habit, and my friends often tell me in a blunt way that I trot like a horse, which, however, I take for a great compliment. Neither shall I disown that in speaking I am apt to fall into the voice and manner of the Hohenhenems, and hear myself ridiculed on that account without the least mortification. In the midst of all this happiness, and when I looked upon myself to be fully settled for life, my master sent for me one morning a little earlier than his usual hour. I observed by his countenance that he was in some perplexity, and at a loss how to begin what he had to speak. After a short silence, he told me he did not know how I was going to take what he was going to say, that in the last General Assembly, when the affair of Yahoos was entered upon, while the representatives have taken offense at his keeping a Yahoo, meaning myself and his family, more like a Hohenhenem than a brute animal, that he was known frequently to converse with me, as if he could receive some advantage or pleasure in my company, that such a practice was not agreeable to reason or nature, or a thing ever heard of before among them. The Assembly did therefore exhort him to either employ me like the rest of my species, or command me to swim back to the place whence I came. That the first of these expedients was utterly rejected by all the Hohenhenems who had ever seen me at his house or their own, for they alleged that because I had some rudiments of reason added to the natural pravity of these animals, it was to be feared I might be able to seduce them into the woody and mountain parts of the country and bring them into troops by night to destroy the Hohenhenems' cattle, as being naturally the ravenous kind and adverse from labor. My master added that he was daily pressed by the Hohenhenems of the neighborhood to have the Assembly's exhortation executed, which he could not put off much longer. He doubted it would be impossible for me to swim to another country, and therefore wished I would contrive some sort of vehicle resembling those I had described to him that he might carry on the sea, in which work I should have the assistance of his own servants as well as those of his neighbors. He concluded that for his own part he should have been content to keep me in his service as long as I lived, because he found I had cured myself of some bad habits and disposition by endeavoring, as far as my inferior nature was capable, to imitate the Hohenhenems. I should observe to the reader here that a decree of the General Assembly in this country is expressed by the word of the Hunyulan, which signifies an exhortation, as near as I can render it, for they have no conception how a rational creature can be compelled, but only advised or exhorted, because no person can disobey reason without giving up his claim to be a rational creature. I was struck by the utmost grief and despair at my master's discourse, and being unable to export the agonies I was under, I fell into a swoon at his feet. When I came to myself, he told me that he concluded I had been dead, for these people are subject to no such imbecilities of nature. I answered in a faint voice that death would have been too great a happiness, that although I could not blame the Assembly's exhortation, or the urgency of his friends, yet, in my weak and corrupt judgment, I thought it might consist with reason to have been less rigorous, that I could not swim a league, and probably the nearest land to theirs might be distant above 100, that many materials necessary for making a small vessel to carry me off were wholly wanting in this country, which, however, I could attempt in obedience and gratitude to this honor, although I concluded the thing to be impossible, and therefore looked upon myself as already devoted to destruction, that the certain prospect of an unnatural death was the least of my evils, for supposing I should escape with life by some strange adventure, how could I think to temper my passing of the days among Yahoos, and relapsing into my old corruptions for want of examples to lead to keep me with the paths of virtue? That I knew too well upon what solid reasons all the determinations of wise Hohenhenems were founded. Not to be shaken by arguments of mine in a miserable Yahoo, and therefore, After presenting him with my humble thanks for the offer of his servant's assistant in making a vessel, and desiring a reasonable time for so difficult a work, I told him I would endeavour to preserve a wretched being, and, if ever I returned to England, was not without hopes of being useful to my own species, by celebrating the praises of the renowned Hohenhenems, and proposing their virtues to the imitation of mankind. My master, in a few words, made me a very gracious reply, allowed me the space of 2 months to finish my boat, and ordered the sorrel nag, my fellow servant, for so at this distance I presume to call him, to follow my instruction, because I told my master that his help would be sufficient, and I knew he had a tenderness for me. In his company, my first business was to go to that part of the coast where my rebellious crew has ordered me to be set on shore. I got upon a height, and looking on every side of the sea, I fancied I saw a small island towards the northeast. I took out my pocket-glass, and could then clearly distinguish about 5 leagues off, as I computed, but it appeared to the sorrel nag to only be a blue cloud. For as he had no conception of any country besides his own, so he could not be as an expert in distinguishing remote objects at sea, as we who so much converse in that element. After I discovered this island, I considered no further, but resolved, if it should be possible, to be the first place of my banishment, leaving the consequence to fortune. I returned home, and consulting with the sorrel nag, we went into a copse at some distance, where I with my knife and he with a sharp flint, fastened very artificially after their manner to a wooden handle, cut down several oak wattles, about the thickness of a walking staff, and some larger pieces, but I shall not trouble the reader with a particular description of my own mechanics. Let it suffice to say that in 6 weeks' time, with the help of the sorrel nag, who performed the parts that require the most labor, I finished a sort of Indian canoe, but much larger, covering it with the skins of yahoos, well stitched together with the hempen threads of my own making. My sail was likewise composed of the skins of the same animal, but I made use of the youngest I could get, the older being too tough and thick. I likewise provided myself with poor paddles. I laid in a stock of boiled flesh and rabbits of fowls, and took with me 2 vessels, one filled with milk, the other with water. I tried my canoe in a large pond near my master's house, and then corrected it with what was amiss, stopping all the chinks with Yahoo's tallow, till I found it staunch and able to bear me and my freight. And when it was as complete as I could possibly make it, I had it drawn on a carriage very gently by Yahoo's to the seaside, under the conduct of a sorrel nag and another servant. When all was ready, and the day came for my departure, I took leave of my master and lady and the whole family, my eyes flowing with tears and my heart quite sunk with grief. But his honour, out of curiosity and perhaps, if I may speak without vanity, partly out of kindness, was determined to see me in my canoe, and got several of his neighbouring friends to accompany him. I was forced to wait above an hour for the tide, then observing the wind very fortunately bearing towards the island which I intended to steer my course, I took a second leave of my master. But as I was going to prostrate myself to kiss his hoof, he did me the honour to raise it gently to my mouth. I am not ignorant how much I have been censured for mentioning this last particular. Detractors are pleased to think it improbable that so illustrious a person should descend to give their great mark of distinction to a creature so inferior as I. Neither have I forgotten how apt some travellers are to boast of extraordinary favours they have received. But if these censures were better acquainted with the noble and courageous disposition of the Hohenhenems, they would soon change their opinion. I paid my respects to the rest of the Hohenhenems in this honour's company, and getting into my canoe, I pushed off from shore. End of chapter 10. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go, available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.